Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kaf Gimel and Amud Aleph with the new perek in the Mishnah. The perek here is discussing what was brought up in the first perek, which is Dine Mimonot Bishlosha, that when it comes to adjudicating monetary matters, you require three dayanim. Now the Mishnah gives you the protocol by which one can pick those dayanim. Ze borer lo echad, ze borer lo echad. He picks one, and the other one picks one. Ushnehem borehim lehem od echad. And then together, jointly, they pick a third one, Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rashi over here explains the Mishnah based on what he thinks the Hava Amina of the Gemara is, and that is that he thinks that when it says Echad over here, Mashma Ziburlo Beit Din Echad, that one litigant picks a Beit Din, other litigant picks a Beit Din, and then between them, they pick a third Beit Din, which would be then a total of 9 individuals that would adjudicate the case. And that's what Rashi says is the first question of the Gemara. Didn't you just say, Dine Mimonot Bishlosha? So then why do you require there be 9 judges that are appointed by these individuals? That the Gemara will address, but that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Chamim Amrim, Shnei Dayanin, Barin Lehen Od Echad. That the 2 Dayanin pick the third themselves. We don't involve litigants in the choosing of either the third Beit Din or the third judge. Now, Zeh Posel Dayano Shel Zeh, Zeh Posel Dayano Shel Zeh, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that you have a right to disqualify the judge of the other party. The other party has a right to disqualify your judge. Chamim Omrim, Eimatai. When is that true? B'zman Shemeviyah Lehen Raya, Shein Krovino Psulein. That's only if you bring evidence that there's something inherently wrong with these individuals. Either they're relatives, or they are Pasul. Aval Im Hayuk Shirim, Omumchim Im Pi Beit Din. If they were individuals who were fine to judge, or they're mumchim in pibeitin, they're a mumchet, they have smicha and a mumchim in pibeitin, and you chole poslan. You don't have any right to disqualify them. Now we have another statement by Rabbi Meir, which is zeh poseli dav shel zeh. Zeh poseli dav shel zeh, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you have a right to disqualify the witnesses brought by the other party. Chumim omrim, ematai, when is that true again? Bizman shmeviel hen raya, shein kovino psulin. Again, you have to have some reason to disqualify them. You can't just disqualify them. You have to bring evidence to the fact that they were a Karov or Pasul, which would make them problematic or disqualified for the case. But Mayuk Sherim, if they deem are fine, and there's no problem with them, and Yochol Poslan, you don't have a right to disqualify them. So here you have 3 sections to the Mishnah. In the first section of the Mishnah, it deals with the choosing of the judges. The next section of the Mishnah deals with the Dayanim, once they're in place, who has a right to disqualify whom. And then the last part of the Mishnah deals with the Edim, again, who has the right to disqualify them. So now the Gemara says, "Mai zeh bor lo echad, v'zer bor lo echad, tlato sagi." So this is the way that Rashi reads it. In the Mishnah, it sounds like you pick one Beit Din. The other guy picks another Beit Din, and between them, they also pick a third Beit Din. So again, we said in the Mishnah, that leads you to a sum total of 9. And the Gemara says, what would you need 9 for? B'talat ha-sagi. It's sufficient to have 3. It says, dinim emonot b'shlosha. So why would you need anything else? So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, no, you read the Mishnah wrong. You misunderstood it. K'shezeh bor leh Beit Din echad, v'zeh bor leh Beit Din echad, shnehem borin lehen od echad. So now, the way it works here, according to Rashi, is you read it wrong. When this person picks a Beit Din, and this one picks a Beit Din, that person can disqualify the other person's Beit Din. Then, what we do in the end is that Shnei Borim Lemachat. So then, they together, jointly, pick a Beit Din. So the way to read it, according to Rashi, is that you pick one Beit Din, the other litigant picks another Beit Din, and then each one of you could disqualify the other's Beit Din, and then together, jointly, you pick a Beit Din. And what it's saying, and this is what Rashi says over here, neither of them can compel the other to be adjudicated under a Beit Din. And therefore you have to come to an agreement between you about which Beit Din would be valid or qualified or acceptable to both parties. So in the end, you will only end up with 3 judges because you're going to disqualify the first 6 judges. And then you'll be left with the 3 that they pick together. That's the way Rashi reads it. And then the Gemara is going to ask a question on that. The Baal Yad Tosafot quote Rashi's explanation and say, V'lo Nehira. Says it doesn't make so much sense. He says, Shari Mashmut HaLashon ain't okay. That's not what it sounds like from the Mishnah nor the Gemara, that you are picking a whole Beit Din over here. What it sounds like, and we know that from the beginning of the Mishnah, is Dine Mimonot B'Shlosha. And if the Mishnah was saying it after Shlosha, you have to pick 9, the Gemara would say that there is an internal stira in the Mishnah. That's not the way the Gemara presents the question. Therefore, the Baal Yad Tosafot think that what Rashi is saying the question is, doesn't make sense. It was 3 and 9, meaning that the Mishnah starts with 3 and then it says 9, and that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara would say, Hagufa Kasha. Internally, the Mishnah is inconsistent. That's not the way the Gemara presents the question, and therefore the Baal Tosfot believe from up front that the Gemara believes that you only are picking three individuals over here. But then he has to explain what was the confusion or what was happening in the Mishnah that's different than the conclusion of the Gemara. And the Baal Tosfot say that this is his Klomar. Why does it say in the Mishnah you must pick one? Klomar lo sagi belav hachi. That it would not work without this. Umishani, the answer of the Gemara is ikishe ze borer. When that one chooses, klomar ein chovavai dala sobkein. You don't have to do it that way, but that's the case that our Mishnah is discussing. What the Baal Tosafot suggests is that the Mishnah seems to say ze borer achad seems to be a mandatory instruction or imperative. You must pick for yourself one, and he must pick for himself one, and then together you must pick a third, implying that that's the only way to constitute a Beit Din. And that's what the Gemara is saying. Mai zebor lo. What type of chover imperative is there to pick a Beit Din? And the Gemara's answer is, Hachagamar kishe zebor lo a Beit Din achat. That's when this individual chooses a Beit Din. And this one chooses a Beit Din. Shnehem borim lehem od achat. Then together they pick the third. And so it's telling you it's not an imperative. It's telling you what the circumstance is. When individuals each pick for themselves a Beit Din, then they have to come to an agreement and pick or choose a Beit Din between them, an acceptable Beit Din to be adjudicated in. But again, it's not an imperative, it's a situational case, which is, if they pick this way, then this is the way to deal with it. Right, so then, there is one other opinion that suggests that the Mishnah is saying that this person picks one judge, the other person picks one judge, and then each one of them disqualifies the other one's judge. And now you pick one judge between them, that means in the end you're only left with one judge. Because each of you disqualified the first choice of the other, and then you have one judge that's left in the middle. So that's the Gemara's question. How can you say Dinim Emor B'Shlosha based on what you're describing here? You're going to end up with one. And even if you want to say that each of these individuals is not disqualifying the other's choice for a Dayan, so now you have two Dayanim, and then they have to pick a third Dayan, that works well for the Chachamim, but for Rabbi Meir, where they have to agree on the third Dayan, why go through this process of picking one and picking one, and then picking the third together, pick all three of them together from the outset? And so the Ran says that the answer of the Gemara is, no, you misunderstood. Each one of them picked a Beit Din, and the other party picked his Beit Din. In choosing his Beit Din, by definition, he's disqualifying or rejecting the choice of the other party. And therefore you end up with each one of them rejecting the other's whole Beit Din choice, and you have to come to a conclusion, or together they must pick a third Beit Din which is agreeable to both of them. Or in essence, the answer to the Gemara is similar to the way Rashi read it. So here you have three different ways to read the Gemara. That of Rashi, which is assuming that it's nine to start, and then the Gemara says, no, we disqualify the first two and end up with three. The Baal of Tosafot who say from the outset the Gemara knows that you only need three. The question is, why is it an imperative that each of you pick a Beit Din that will get disqualified and then pick a third between you? Just start with the three between you. The answer is that that was what happened in this case. Each of them had picked a Beit Din and then was disqualified by the other. And then in that situation, you have to pick a third between them. But from the outset, if you had done that, that would have been fine as well. And for the Ran and others, the question is, if each one of them is picking a Dayan and disqualifying the other's Dayan, you're either going to end up with one Dayan. And even if they don't disqualify the Dayanim, still, why aren't they just picking all the Dayanim together and not the one? And the answer again is like Rashi, that each of them is picking a Beit Din, which automatically or by definition disqualifies the other. And therefore, they have to come to an agreement on that third Beit Din between them. Now, both the Ran and the Baal Tosafot over here question, why is it that you have a right to reject the Beit Din at all? We said earlier in the Masech, back on Daf Hey, where the Gemara said that a mumkeg midan afilu yechidi, and there Tosafot said v'yachol kofet adam bal kocho, that dayan yechidi can compel the parties to show up in the din, as well as stam gimel yecholim dadunet adam bal kocho. And similarly, if you pick a Beit Din of three, they can compel the other party to come to trial or subpoena him to trial. So why over here, once the individual has picked a Beit Din, why can't they just subpoena the other litigant? The answer that both the Baal Tosafot and the Ran and others give is that there's a difference. In the case back on Daf Hey, that's a situation in which one of the parties is refusing to adjudicate at all in front of any Beit Din. In that case, the Beit Din chosen by the litigant can compel the other party to show up or be held in contempt of court. Over here, in the situation where both litigants agree that they are willing to go to court, they're just disagreeing about which court they want to go to. Over there, the court chosen by one of the two litigants can't compel the other litigant to show up because the other litigant is agreeable. He just wants to be in a court that he agrees to or a court that he feels is fair between the two of them. And so therefore, in our case, each one of them can disqualify or reject the Beit Din of the other party and cannot be compelled to adjudicate in front of them until they come to an agreement about the Beit Din that is satisfactory to both of them. Earlier on in Daf Hey, where the Baal Tosfot spoke about compelling or subpoenaing the litigant to show up and deal with the case, that's a case where he refuses to adjudicate at all. He doesn't even want to pick a Beit Din. He doesn't want to deal with this case, or he's refusing to go to court over this matter. In that case, they have rights to demand that he show up, Baal Korcho. Gemara says about that, is that really true? V'afilo lo v'matzi me'akev. What you're saying here, or based on the answer of the Gemara, is that the litigants have a free hand at disqualifying the other person's choice for location, choice for adjudication. And it's only if they come to an agreed upon location can they compel the individual to go there or to be adjudicated in that location. So now the Gemara is saying, is that really true? Do the Malve and the Lova have equal footing when it comes to this? V'amar Rabbi Lazar, Loshanu Ela Malve. It's only true by the creditor of a Lova when it comes to the borrower, Kofin Oto B'dan B'iro. The creditor can force him to be adjudicated in a valid Beit Din in his city because of Eved Lova, the Ish Malve. And so the Malve has the upper hand and he can dictate the location in which he wants the case to be adjudicated. Kedamar Rabbi Yochanan, so my answer is no, no, no. Our case here is a little different because it's Be'erka Ot Shebesuria Shanu. And so Al-Khanami, the case over here is Erka Ot Besuria Shanu. We're going to see in a second where the original statement about Erka Ot Besuria was said. But we're suggesting over here that that's the same thing in this part of the Mishnah, that we're talking about Erka Ot Besuria, and therefore both parties, both litigants, have an equal right to disqualify the Beit Din. Courts in Syria, as Rashi says there, Shaloi Biki'in B'din Torah. They didn't know how to judge properly under Din Torah. Hilka Chafilu Loveh Matzi Me'akev. For that reason, not only does the creditor have a right of refusal, so does the debtor in that case, because these people are not really qualified individuals to be adjudicating. And given that, the Lova also has a right to say, I'm not going to be brought to this Beit Din or have the case tried under this Beit Din, because they're not experts in Din Torah. Aval mumchim lo. From that, you would conclude that if it was a Beit Din full of mumchim, you did not have a right to override it, because we're saying that it's only in these Berakot Shebesuria Shanu, implying that if it was mumchim, the Lova wouldn't have a right of refusal or rejection of the Beit Din, and he would have to abide by the choice of the Malve. So Rapapa Amar, Afilu Teimo Mumchim, even mumchim, you can disqualify. Gom Beit Din at Rav Huna, the Rav Chista. The case where we're dealing with the Beit Din of Rav Huna, Rav Chista, Rashi says over here that they are adjacent to each other. They were very close by to each other. The Baal Tosafot are unwilling to accept that and say they were a minimum of 3 parsaot away from each other. He's trying to grapple with the Gemara that we saw in Erevin with regards to Mor Halacha Bifnei Rabo, that you're not allowed to open up a Beit Din or adjudicate cases in the sphere of influence of your Rebbe. The sphere of influence of your Rebbe is to a circumference of 3 parsaot. So what Baal Tosafot suggests is that Rav Huna and Rav Chista had 3 parsaot between them, and therefore they didn't run into that problem of Mor Halacha Bifnei Rabo. There, the Lovek can reject the Beit Din, the Kamalei Mikatar Metarchna Lach. What am I doing to inconvenience you? What am I doing to make it difficult for you? You wanted to go, let's say, for instance, to Bei Rav Huna, and I say I want to go to Bei Rav Chista. So what is a big deal for you? Bei Rav Chista and Bei Rav Huna are no farther away from each other. They're both in the local area. And therefore, the Loveh should have a right to refuse the one Beit Din in order to go to the other Beit Din. That's only because in this case there's no inconvenience. If there's any inconvenience, then he can't make a statement like that. What's the big bother for you? So now it's not. So now the Gemara is somewhat satisfied with the answer, but then runs into a problem as we move through the Mishnah with that answer. So the answer of the Gemara is that the methodology that we're using over here gives the right to each of the litigants to refuse to accept the other party's judges, and that is only true when we're dealing with Erka Ot Shebesuria. We're dealing with those courts in Syria, which are not qualified courts, implying that if we have mumchim, if we have experts or real courts, that that's not the case. And Rav Papa says, even with mumchim, Rilova still has a right of refusal or the ability to ask for a different location as long as it's on equal footing and there's no inconvenience to the malve. The Agmar says, it's not. Our Mishnah says, Chamir Mim Shnei Dayanim Borin Lem Odechad. The two Dayanim pick a third Dayan between them. If you want to say, like we said before, that when it says Echad over here means a Beitin, Beitin Batur the Pasli Luhu, Azlu Biru Luhu, Beitina Achrine. Once you've disqualified a Beitin, that disqualified Beitin can then go ahead and pick another court. I mean, once they're disqualified, they should be fully disqualified. They shouldn't have any say in the matter. Yet, we're seeing here that after they are disqualified, they go ahead and choose the third Beitin and Va'od, my Zebor Lo Echad, my Zebor Lo Echad. If that's the case, what's the whole point of each one of them picking, if in the end, according to Rashi, the two Bati Dinim are going to pick a third Beitin, then why bother picking the first Beitin? Just get to a consensus about the Beitin that you're going to pick, rather than each of you picking a Beitin and having it being disqualified. Why is there an imperative? So Zer Borlo Echad, Zer Borlo Echad. Elohachi Kamar. This is the way to read it. Kishe Zer Borlo Dayan Echad, Zer Borlo Dayan Echad. Shnehem Borinim Od Echad. And when this person picks for himself one Dayan, and this person picks for himself one Dayan, then the two Dayanim pick for themselves a third Dayan. So over here there's no disqualification going on. It's simply that each litigant picks one judge to represent him in the case, and then those two judges together come to a conclusion about who the third judge should be. Why do we bother to do it this way? Why don't you just have them agree to the whole Beit Din? Amri b'marova. So now to sell the same mishmei the Rabbi Zera. He talks to Zeh Borler Dayan Echad, Zeh Borler Dayan Echad, Shnei Borler Maud Echad, Yatzah Din Lamito. It causes the case to come out and be adjudicated in the fairest way possible. That's either because the judge picked by each litigant might be somewhat biased, even unintentionally, to the party that brought them. On the other hand, if each party picks their judge, and then the judges pick together a third judge who will basically be the arbiter between them, then Yetzah Din Amito, we're going to end up with a case that comes to the proper conclusion because we balanced all the interests in the judges that are sitting on the case. In addition, you also end up with what Balei Tosafot suggests over here, Perisher Ivan, Shafilo Achayav Yipara Kiratzon, that even the person who is found guilty will pay willingly. Yomar Kushta Dayone. He'll say that they really came to a truthful and right conclusion because Shani Batsmi Berate Achad. I chose one of the judges. And so I have representation there in the judges. When they come up with an unfavorable verdict, I'm going to listen to it because I got to believe that the guy who I picked defended me. But nevertheless, they still decided against me even though I picked one or had someone on my side, and that shows me that if that must be the conclusion, that might be the right conclusion of the Beit Din. That's why we do it in this manner, in order to reach a fairer and more equitable solution to the case, in which both parties will be satisfied with the composition of the Beit Din. Okay, let us say that Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in our Mishnah argue in this memra of Rabbi Marav. Damar Rabbi Marav, Eina Edim Chutmim Al Ashtar. Edim do not sign the star unless they know who the other signatories are. Rabbi Meir lately, the Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Rabbi Meir doesn't subscribe to their position. Rabbanan Itlu, the Rabbi Yehuda Marav. And the Rabbanan do subscribe to that position of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. And that will explain the difference here in our Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir, who does not hold the Rabbi Yehuda Marav, says that you can sign on a document, or people will sign on a document, even though they don't know who is with them. And therefore, in this case, the judges will agree to adjudicate a case, even though they have no idea who the third judge will be, because the third judge will be picked by the two litigants between them. But the first judges are willing, or it's acceptable for them to accept this position as a judge in the case, even though they have no idea who the third judge will be. On the other hand, the Rabbanan believe you need to know who the other judge is, otherwise you won't sit in the din. And the only way to do that is to have the judges pick the third judge, because then they'll know who they're going to sit with, rather than have the litigants pick the third judge between them. Where it says, no, the Kuleyama Itluhu Rav Yehuda Marav. Everybody subscribes to this position of Rav Yehuda Marav. B'da Tayyanim Kuleyama Lo Plige Debinan. And everybody agrees you need the judges to give their stamp of approval or agreement to the choice of the third judge. The question is, kipligi v'dat balei dinim, do you require the litigants to also agree? V'meir sofer dat balei dinim nami bayina, and you also need the agreement of the parties, and that's why he demands that the parties agree to bring in that third individual. Rabbanan savre dat dayanim bi'ina dat balei dinim lo bayina. You need the judges to agree on it, you don't need the litigants to agree on it, and therefore the two judges between themselves can pick the third judge without the knowledge or acquiescence of the balei dinim, of the litigants in the case. Gufa, amri v'dam rabin edim, chutmin l'shtar, elim kain, v'chulei. Gemara brings that Tanya nami ochi, we have a braita that supports that. Kacha yu nikiya adat shvishalayim osim. This is how those of clear conscience in Yerushalayim acted. But the idea of nikiya adat, that these are people who are steeped, well-versed in the laws of the Torah, and try to practice everything properly according to the din of the Torah. So this is the practices that they kept in Yerushalayim. Lo yu chotmim al ashtar, they would never sign on a document unless they knew who the other signatories to the document were. And they also would not sit down to adjudicate a case unless they know who else was going to sit with them on the Beit Din. And they would not join a meal. Elim Kain, they know who is going to be at the meal, who are the attendees of the meal. So you see this concept brought up in the Braita, which is that people take precautions in order to protect themselves, that they will only agree to be in certain circumstances if they know the context of the circumstances. And that includes testifying, signing on a document, adjudicating a case, being a judge, or even more mundane matters like eating together. They won't be there unless they know who the other parties are that are joining them for the meal. As the Bach notes over here, the reason the Chachamim want the two judges to pick the third judge and not have the litigants pick the third judge is to avoid a problem in which they will then have to deal with that third judge and be cornered into a position where they'll have to accept that third judge because they don't want to embarrass him by saying that they don't want to sit with him. That has implications for all of these cases, which is, V'lo yu ha-shnayim yecholim lomar, inon yoshvim im zeh, the fish, you have to be careful about how you do this, which is that if you are refusing to attend something, you're refusing to be in a case, you're refusing to accept another party in the case, then you have to be careful that you don't offend that other party or that you don't say something that is offensive to that other party. So it has to be done in a careful and nuanced manner as to not offend the other party that you don't want to sit with them in a din or you don't want to participate with them in a su'udah. Because if you don't, and if you're not careful about that, then you end up with things like Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, which is the story in Gittin that led to the Churban HaBayit, where those individuals were so makpid about who they ate with that they were willing to embarrass an individual and throw him out of the Su'udah. All right, now the Gemara continues with the next piece of the Mishnah, which is that Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim argue about who is entitled to disqualify the judges in the case. Kol kiminei the pasul dayanei. Gemara's obvious question is, Rabbi Meir says that the litigant has a right to disqualify the dayan. What right does he have to disqualify the dayan? Where can he come off just saying, oh, this dayan is pasul? That's what we said before when we brought this answer of Rabbi Yochanan to explain the first part of the Mishnah, that this is from this part of the Mishnah, which is, that we're talking about Erkaot in Surya, we're talking about the Bate Dinim in Surya, which have people who are not qualified in them, then the litigant has a right to say that this person is disqualified or this person is not ra'oi or I don't want to go to a Beit Din like this because I don't feel that they're going to adjudicate or reach a just decision. Aval mumchim lo. But that's not true by mumchim, which is that you don't have a right to just dismiss them or disqualify them. The Chachamim over here say, when is that true? When they are krovim and psulim, when there's an inherent problem, but mayu ksherim or mumchim, if they were kasher or a mumchem mipeit din, any ochol poslam, he doesn't have a right to override them or to disqualify them. Michlau, the Rabbi Meir mumchim nami kamar. If you're saying that means that Rabbi Meir, even by the cases of mumchim, would say his position, and that it allows you to disqualify. Gemara says ach kamar, abimayu ksherim nasu kumumchim mipeit din. That if they are ksherim, it's as if they are mumchim mipi beitin. Ve'enu yochol l'poslan. and therefore he cannot disqualify them, which would support the diuk that we just made out of Rabbi Yochanan's position, which is that Rabbi Meir agrees in a case of mumchim that you cannot disqualify them. And what the Chachamim are saying is that any dayan kasher is the equivalent to a mumche, and therefore you don't have a right to disqualify that judge. Rabbi Meir will disagree with that and say you do have a right to disqualify them if they are not mumchim. As Rabbi Yochanan said, that be'erkaot shebisuria, you do have a right to refuse to have your case heard in such a court. Tashma, amru lo l'Rabbi Meir, lo kol ha'imenu sheposel dayan shemumche l'rabim. What right do you have to come and disqualify a judge who's considered to be a mumche to the public at large? Implying that Rabbi Meir believes you can disqualify a mumche, and that would go against the inference we drew from Rabbi Yochanan's position before. So, Ema, read it this way, local emenush posel dayan shehum hu rabina lehem, that he doesn't have a right to disqualify or undermine a judge who has been picked by the public. Not that he is a mumche to the rabbim, rather he's a mumche as a result of the rabbim. The rabbim accepted him or qualified him to be a judge, and they then accepted that the constitution of that beitin to be acceptable in terms of adjudicating cases in their locale. So that way, it's not a real mumche who Rabbi Meir is allowing you to disqualify. It's just a mumche or the equivalent of a mumche because he was accepted by all parties involved. Tanya Nami Yochi, we have a bright that supports that. Lolam posel b'olech ad shikabel alav. Now there's a different gusot here. Either ad shikabel alav beitin or ad shikabel alav bifnei beitin she mumche li rabim, divi Rabbi Meir. So this bright is supportive of the diok that we made before, that Rabbi Meir agrees by mumchim that you cannot disqualify them. And that's what he says here. You have a right to reject or disqualify the judges until you are in a beitin of mumche rabim, that is mumchim. And there Rabbi Meir would agree that you no longer have the right to disqualify the judges. Whether that's the girsa shikabela beitin shemumche rabim, or the alternate girsa, which is achikvelav bifnei beitin shemumche rabim, which you can see is the girsa of Rashi. And you would have to explain that kabel over here is not to accept, but rather kuvel. He puts his ta'anot, or he makes his claims in front of a Beit Din Shel Mumchim. But in either case, what we're saying is that Rabbi Meir, supportive of what Rabbi Yochanan said before, would agree by a Beit Din Mumchim, you don't have a right to disqualify the judges.
Gemara says, wait a minute, if that's your explanation, v'ayitim k'mumchim dami, aren't witnesses similar to Mumchim,
in that they don't need smicha, and ignorance for an aid is not an automatic disqualifier. So they have the same status as a mumche, which means
that you don't have a right to question their authority. And a baal din doesn't have a right to question the authority of eidim. That's what the Torah says. The Torah says if eidim come and testify against them, the baal din can't stand up and say they're not telling the truth. I mean, he can say it, it's just not going to help. The eidim override him. Just like a judge who's a mumche has a right to adjudicate, and people can't disqualify him or override him or undermine him because he is qualified to be a judge. V'amar Rabbi Meir, zeh posel eidav shel zeh, v'zeh posel eidav shel zeh. And yet Rabbi Meir in the latter half of the Mishnah says that you have a right to disqualify the eidim of the other party. If you're telling me that Rabbi Meir distinguishes between a mumche and erkaot shebisuria, that only by erkaot shebisuria do you have a right to disqualify. By the case of mumchim, you don't have a right to disqualify. Then why over here in the Mishnah does it say that you have a right to disqualify eidim? Eidim are on par, or on the same level as a mumche the Beit Din. So then why does the litigant have a right to disqualify it if you're telling me Rabbi Meir believes that a mumche cannot be disqualified? Alright, so Gemara says, ha'itmar law. Didn't we say about that by the case of the eidim? Amar Reish Lakish pekadosh yamar davar zeh? There's no way that this holy mouth, meaning Rabbi Meir, would have ever said such a thing that you can disqualify an aid just because you don't want them in the case, you don't think that they are the proper individual for the case. Today, it must be that you have to amend the Mishnah to read Edo. Now, Edo is the singular form. Instead of what we have in our Mishnah, which is Edav, now it says over here that you can disqualify Edo, his single aid. So when it says Edo, the Mai. What's the purpose, or what is the usefulness of a single aid? Ilema lemamon, if you want to say for monetary matters, you don't need the litigant to disqualify him. The Torah says he's disqualified. You can't move money, or you can't come to a conclusion in a monetary case without two eidim. One eid is not going to do anything. If it's to compel the accused party to take a shvua, to The Torah already says that he's believed like two, the single eighth, and therefore you can't undermine him, you can't block him, you're going to have to take a shvuah to counteract him. Somebody says, no, the olam lemamot, that the case we're discussing over here is a monetary matter, and lo tzricho de kavle le kebe tre, the case where he accepted this single eighth as being the equivalent of two edim. My kamash v'lan. So what is the Mishnah teaching us then? The matzi hodurbe, that you have a right to walk away from it. Even though you accepted what otherwise would be considered like an arbitration, or you accepted certain evidence to be brought in this case, which is typically not accepted, but you agreed to allow it in the case, then can you back out of that position that you took, back out of that right that you gave to the other party? The Gemara is saying, yes, you have a right to back out of it. Tanina, we already learned this in a Tanaic work. Amalo neman alai abo, neman alai avicha. My father should be believed. Your father should be believed. Nemanim alai gimoroi bakar. These three cowboys would also be fine as a bait in for us. Rimei omer, yecholach zorbo. Rimei says you can always back away or back out of it. Rimei and yecholach zorbo. You can't back out of it once you've committed to do it. So in essence, what we're saying over here is that the case in the Mishnah, again, is with an Eid Echad. Usually the Eid Echad would have only bearing for a Shavuah, not for anything else. But given the context in which the party agreed to accept this single Eid as a double Eid, as two Eidim, now he has power like that of two Eidim. Does he have a right, once he's accepted that type of evidence, or is that testimony as being the equivalent of two, can he walk away from that? Can he back away from that? So Rabbi Meir says, yes. Whereas the Chachamim say, no. So Rabbi Meir is saying, yes. But that's the Kamash Malon of the Mishnah, that despite the fact that if you accepted it, you have a right to retract it or back away from it. The only problem is that we have a Tanaic work that already describes this Machloket explicitly. And therefore, what is our Mishnah adding over here? And so now the Gemara brings a qualification of the Neman Alai Roi Bakar that we just brought, which is, V'amar Rav Dimi Breid Rav Nachman, Breid Rav Yosef, Gon the Kibbutz Alei Bechad, the case where he accepted the aid to be one. So now, the way Rashi reads Rav Dimi, is that Rav Dimi is qualifying the Breita, and saying the case in the Breita is not where he accepted these psulim as the equivalent of two individuals. He simply accepted the psulim. And there are two other kosher judges on the Beit Din. Now Tosfot questions fundamentally, why do we need this qualification of Rav Dimi in order for it to be a question on our Mishnah? And the Balei Tosfot answer that without Rav Dimi, we would have assumed that Neman Alai Roi Bakar has Tarte L'Riuta, has two flaws in it. Number one, he's picking individuals who are psulim. And number two is, he's accepting them as a larger number than they really are. He's accepting this disqualified or pasul judge to adjudicate the case and act like three judges. Whereas the case in our Mishnah is a case when there's only one Liriuta. There's only one negative aspect here, which is accepting an aid to equivalent of two instead of one. But with the qualification of Rav Dimi, we now see that even the Neman Alai Roi Bakar is also a case where there is only one Liriuta, one disqualification, which is, like Rashi said over here, he's accepting the judge. The Roi Bakar is one of the three judges. He has two kosher judges, and then he has this third judge who's not kosher. And so now, it really is a question on our Mishnah, because both of them only have Chada the Riuta, based on this qualification of Rav Dimi. And then the question becomes, what's the Chiddush of our Mishnah, if it's telling us a machloka between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, that we already know from Neman Alai Shlosha Roei Bakar. And now, the Gemara says, Tzricha, we need both sources. Ditana Abba V'Avicha, had you only had the source of Neman Alai Abba and Neman Alai Avicha, B'hakam Rei Rabbonon Delo Matzi Hodor Bei, over there, that's where the Chachamim say he cannot retract his acceptance. Mishum da Abba v'Avicha Chazu de'Alma, because Abba and Avicha are qualified in another case. The psul here is an exogenous problem. It's a problem because they are related in this case. In any other case, they'd be completely qualified individuals. Now, the truth is that Shlosha Roei Bakar, which is the other case in that Tanaic source, would be a problem that is pasul across the board. So either you have to say the disqualification of Shlosha Roei Bakar in a normal case is only a pasul dirabonon, and since it's only a pasul dirabonon, then midoraita, technically they are qualified. And so therefore in this case also, it's that rabbinic imposition is what's causing the disqualification, but they're otherwise qualified in another case. And that's why dirabonon are saying that here you can't retract it. That's what the Rosh Mishnah suggests. On the other hand, the Ran And the Rosh suggests you have to say that there is nothing inherently pasul in the Shlosha Rabbei Bakar, except the fact that they didn't learn. There's nothing wrong with them in terms that would disqualify them if they learned or if they got the information from someone else in order to adjudicate the case properly, then in Ochanami they would qualify as proper judges. And so therefore that might be the reasoning why the Rabbanan don't allow you to retract in this case. In our case, if the Mishnah, where you're saying that one person is the equivalent of two, that this person is never qualified as the equivalent of two Edim, not in this case, and not in any other case, Ema Modeh the Rabbi Meir. Maybe in that case, the Chachamim will agree to Rabbi Meir and say that you can retract such an acceptance. V'yashmin en Baha. If we only had the case of our Mishnah, which said that you're accepting Kechad Betray, Baha Kam Rabbi Meir. Maybe over there, that's where Rabbi Meir says you can retract your acceptance. About Bahahi, but the case of Nemanalai Abba, Avicho, or Nemanalai Shlosha Roei Bakar, Ema Modeh the Rabbanan. Maybe he would agree to the Rabbanan's position that you can't retract there because those people will be qualified in other situations. Tzricha, therefore we need both the Neman Alai Abba Vavicha as well as our Mishnah to teach us that this machloki between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim persists in both cases. And Rabbi Meir believes you can retract your acceptance in either of these cases. And the Chachamim believe you cannot retract your acceptance in either of these cases. Now Gemara, after explicating on this answer says, it just doesn't make so much sense, because Hamak Tani B'Reisha says the earlier part of the Mishnah says, Dayan no, that the person has a right to disqualify the other person's Dayan, the other litigant's Dayan, and there he writes it in the singular, Seifa Edav. Then the Mishnah uses the word Edav in the Seifa, which is plural, Alma Dav Kaktani. Now you can't say, yeah, it didn't mean Edav, it really meant Edo, and it was supposed to be written in the singular and not the plural. That doesn't work because the beginning of the Mishnah is written in singular. And therefore, when we find a word in the second part of the Mishnah that's plural, it seems that that is intentional and not unintentional, and therefore you can't just make this emendation to say that you read Edo instead of Edav. I'm a Rabbi Lazar. So Rabbi Lazar explains the case differently. It says, it's a case where the litigant and an independent aid comes to disqualify the judges or the edim in the case. So it says, what right does he have to testify about these edim? Is a person who's nogeaba davar, he has what to gain by disqualifying these edim. These edim might be coming to testify against him. And so if he disqualifies these edim, he's helped himself out. So why is he considered to be a nogeba davar? So Meracha Breid Ravika Gagon Shikara Lav Ar. It's a case where he raises specific questions about validity of these edim. Arar Damai. What exactly is this invalidation that he is suggesting with regards to these edim? Ilem Arar Degazbanuta. If you want to tell me that what they're claiming over here is this guy's a thief, then for sure he would be considered to be partial in this case because it directly impacts on the testimony being brought against him by disqualifying them in this way. Must be about a problem in this family lineage. There's something in this family lineage which is improper. That these edim are testifying about the family status. And then the individual himself then is impacted by that and automatically or by default becomes pasul. Rabbanon Savre, the Rabbanon others say, sof, nogebe dutohu. In the end, no matter how much of a derivative or indirect disqualification this is, in the end it still leads back to a disqualification that will help the litigant in this case.
But Rabbi Meir will have to say that the disqualification over here of the mishpacha as a whole has a derivative impact on this individual. And so the edim here are not testifying about this individual in particular, but rather on his family as a whole. As a derivative of testifying about his family, it has an impact on him. And that impact on him then also has an impact on this case. So he already sees this as being removed from the direct testimony where he's considered to be nogeya ve'eduto.
So fiyata Rav Dimi, amar Rav Yochanan machloke b'shtei kitei edim. It's a case where there are two sets of edim being brought over here. The Rabbi Meir Samir Tzarich Livarer. This is the girsa of the first Lashon in Rashi, which he does not like. Rashi brings an alternate girsa or an emendation that he has in the Gemara, which he favors more heavily. But the text that we have in our Gemaras follows that first Lashon of Rashi, which is the Rabbi Meir Samir Tzarich Livarer. Remember, believes that you need to clarify the situation. Rabbanan Tzarich Livarer, you do not have to clarify the situation. Aval, b'katachat, divyakol, en yochol l'poslan. But if it's a single group of edim that come to testify, everybody says he cannot disqualify them. So what the machloket here is revolving around is this concept of tzarich levarer. If a litigant makes a statement, how tightly do we hold him to that statement? The litigant says, I have two sets of edim who are going to come and testify on my behalf, and then he only brings in one set of edim. Do we then believe that one set of edim that he brought because he brought kosher edim? Or do we say you promised two sets of edim, and since you didn't bring the other set of edim, that casts aspersions on your whole case or on your ability to bring evidence in this case. And so what we're saying here is since he's tzarich levarer, since he's going to be demanded to bring that second set of edim here because he claimed that I have two sets of edim, then when the litigant disqualifies along with the third party the first set of edim, he hasn't necessarily helped himself because the counterparty already said, I'm bringing another set of edim, two sets of edim. So if you take out one, he still has the other one to come and testify against this litigant who disqualified the first set of edim. Amar lefanav Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi, Ein sham elakat achat mahu. There's only one group there, then what's the din? Ein sham elakat achat. If there is only one group there, v'amart. Didn't them explicitly stay? Aval v'kat achat divrei hakol ein yachol l'poslan. There was only one grouping over there, then you have no right to disqualify them. Ella, no, yeah, this is the question. Nimtzeit kachnia kovim upsulim mahu. After we allow, according to Rabbi Meir, him, the litigant to disqualify the first set of edim with another aid, then he brings in the second set of edim, and after all this has transpired, the second set of edim are found to be kovim upsulim. What do we say then? Do we then say retroactively the first edim become the only evidence in the case? And therefore, the Baal Din, the litigant, can't disqualify them because he's going to be a nogea b'davar. Or do we say, what's done is done. Since we disqualified the first set of edim, not knowing that the second edim would come along and be disqualified, that's enough. This is the first lashon that Rashi brings to explain the Gemara, that the necessity of tzarech levarer just means that you have to show up and bring in edim to substantiate your claim. You don't have to bring in kasher edim, you just have to bring in two sets of edim. So as long as you bring in two sets of edim, qualified your claim, and that's what makes it that in the case where you say you're going to bring two sets of edim, and the Baal Din disqualifies the first set of edim, he hasn't changed anything about the case. The other party has to bring a second set of edim, because that's what he said he would do, and his disqualification, the first set of edim, doesn't change the fact that he is complying with his statement that he will bring two sets of edim. On the other hand, Rashi brings a girsa that is just the opposite. Vehuikar, he says this is the proper way to read the Gemara, and that is the Rabbi Meir Savar ain't Tzarich Levarer. Rabbi Meir believes you do not have to substantiate your claim, whereas the Rabbanan Savar ain't Tzarich Levarer. On the other hand, the Rabbanan believe you do have to substantiate your claim. The difference in this Lashon is that when we say Tzarich Levarer, it means you must substantiate your claim by bringing Kusher Edim to substantiate your claim. So the Chachamim say, listen, if you're going to disqualify the first set of Edim, you've actually now hindered his ability to bring evidence over here because he needs to bring two sets of kosher edim in order for his evidence to hold. And you have just disqualified his first set of edim. Therefore, you're a nogea b'davar. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes, en tzarich levarer. You don't have to do that. You do not have to substantiate your statement and bring kosher edim. And therefore, here, where he says he has another set of edim that he's going to bring and you disqualify the first one, then in the background, we know there's another set of edim coming to testify. And your disqualification of the first set does not undermine the case or does not make you a nogea b'davar partial to testifying to invalidate this set of edim. Then the question of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi is the following. According to Rabbi Meir, who says, ain't tzarich levarer, when the second set of edim become pasulim, then you've lost this ability to say that when he testified about the first set of edim, that there was always in the background or lingering this other set of edim, and therefore he was not considered to be nogea b'davar. Now we learn that the second set of edim were disqualified for another reason. Does that now affect retroactively the testimony that the Baal Din and the original aid brought? Because now we realize that they were nogea b'davar because he disqualified the only kosher edim that the other party can bring. Although the Baalei Tosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Tam that they think that the Lashon Rishon of Rashi is more appropriate. And that's based on the Rabbeinu Tam's view that this requirement of tzarich levarer is only a din lachatchila and not a din b'diavad. That means that if he doesn't show up with this evidence in the end, he will not then not be believed with his testimony. The chatchila, we're going to expect him to bring it.
And therefore, he thinks that Tzarech Levarer over here is only a din lachatchila, and it doesn't mean that you have to show up with kosher edim. And therefore, he favors more heavily the first explanation of Rashi. And the reason is, even though you only have to do this lachatchila, is because Beit Din is going to say to the litigant, you said you have two sets of edim, please bring in the second set of edim. And we assume that he's going to comply with the request of Beit Din, even though it's lachatchila only, and he will bring that second set of edim, and that's why we don't classify him as being nogeba davar with regards to his disqualifying of the first set of edim. Although the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot has a totally different view about the explanation of the Gemara over here, and he says that the case is a case, they come to court, he brings two edim and testify on his behalf. Right after that, he brings another two edim, and they also testify similarly to the first set of edim. The imtan Shimon, if the counterparty claims over here, v'amar elahar ba'a edim psulim, all four of these edim are psulim, meaning the two sets of edim. Rabbi Meir Omer shumim lo, we listen to him. V'ne'amar l'ruvein havei raya shem shkirim. You got to bring evidence to the fact that these are kosher edim. V'fish atah lo ayita mevi edim achar edim al yinan echad. You would never have brought two sets of edim right in a row saying the exact same thing. Elaim came that you knew that one set of these edim was problematic. We don't know which one of them is problematic, and therefore the burden of proof now shifts to you, and Shimon is believed in this case to disqualify these edim. So that's how the Rambam reads this idea that of shtekite edim, as soon as you bring in shtekite edim, that's where Rabbi Meir introduces the possibility that you can disqualify them without any evidence, because it's self-evident. The fact that he brought two sets of edim saying the exact same thing automatically makes us suspicious about the veracity, the qualifications or quality of these edim. So Amar Lahen, kvar yidu edim arishonim. Yigad Amre, Amar Ravashi, kvar yidu edim arishonim. Or some quote this in the name of Ravashi. So in the first Lashon, Rashi says, kvar yidu edim arishonim means that when we find the kachshniya psula, kvar nitkabla b'kashrut edutan shelelu amedim ala psul. Those that already testified earlier, those that cast aspersions on the first set of edim, when they testified, we accepted their testimony as being valid. There was no reason at that time to believe that they were partial, because there was a second set of edim coming, and therefore when they disqualified them, they didn't necessarily help their case. And since we already accepted their position and their testimony, we don't come now retroactively and try to undermine what we already did earlier. And therefore the testimony of this Baal Din plus the other aid will stand and disqualify the first set of edim. And the second Lashon, Rashi suggests that Kvar Yidu Edim Rishonim means retroactively we will let the first edim stand, because now, yes, the litigant becomes an Ogea Badavar. Since we have now disqualified the second set of edim, retroactively the first set of edim, when he disqualified them, he was an Ogea Beeduto, and therefore we will erase his testimony and say that the first edim that testified are now valid edim, and they cannot be disqualified by the Baal Din, because then he now, retroactively, is clearly a nogeya badavar. Rashi says he favors the first lashon, because the language of kvar yidu rishonim supports the first version that Rashi brought, that we're speaking about the Baal Din and the aid that came to testify about the psul of the first set of edim. Neima beplukta the Rabbi of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel kamiflege. Let us say they're arguing this machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which we saw at the end of Baba Batra. The Tanya ibat lidon b'shtaru b'chazaka. Person who comes to court and says, this is my field, and I both have a shtar to evidence that, as well as I've been there for the requisite number of years to establish a chazaka. Nidon b'shtar divei Rabbi. Rabbi says, well, once you brought up the shtar, you're going to have to show the shtar. You can't just say, I have a shtar and a chazaka, and then not show up with the shtar, because that's the better piece of evidence. The other hand, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, nidon b'chazaka. You adjudicate the case based on the chazaka. Mar says, v'avina ba, b'chazaka v'lo b'shtar? How could it be that he lets you use the secondary piece of evidence, which is the fact that you were there for 3 years, uncontested, rather than the shtar itself, which is the document of the transaction? Ela'ema, you have to amend. Rabbi Shimon goes in position to say, af b'chazaka. Not that solely b'chazaka you can bring the proof, but even with chazaka you can bring the proof. So you have a choice. You can bring the shtar or you can bring the chazaka, but you don't have to bring both, or you don't have to bring the shtar. Whereas, according to Rabbi, you would always have to bring the shtar because your chazaka derives from the shtar.
Kaimelon, Tzarich Rer, Kamiflage. And we established that the machloket here was premised on the issue of Tzarich Levarer.
And let us suggest, at least according to the Lashon that we have in our Gemara, the first Lashon in Rashi, that Rabbi Meir is Kirabi, who requires Tzarich Levarer, and Rabbonon, Kirabi Shimon, that you do not need to be Mivarer.
Mar says, lo, Ali with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kuliamelo Plige, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, nobody argues that when he says nidon af bichazakah, that there's no necessity to levarer, to bring evidence. When you state you have evidence, there's no imperative then to bring that evidence or demand that you bring that evidence. Ki plege, why do they argue? I'll leave it to Rabbi. According to Rabbi, Rabbi Meir dik Rabbi. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi, who requires tzarich levarer. Rabbanon amelucha ad kan lo kamar Rabbi otam. Rabbanon say that Rabbi only said over there this din elu bichazaka. Because the chazaka derives from the shtar. So if I say I have a shtar and a chazaka, no way we're going to let you get away with just bringing the chazaka as evidence. We're going to want to see the shtar. Because the chazaka is only a derivative of that shtar. If you have no shtar, then the chazaka will work in place of the shtar. But that's exactly what it's doing. It's in place of the shtar. But that means if you have a shtar, we would definitely favor you bringing in the shtar, and not using the Shnei Chazaka, because if you have the Shtar, that's the best piece of evidence that you could have. V'hocha, in our case, Dahani Eidim, Lamikoach Eidim, Achrinei Ka'atu, these Eidim, and those Eidim, they don't come from each other, they're not a derivative of each other, they're independent pieces of evidence. There, Afil Rabbi Modei in Tzarech Levarer. There, even Rabbi agrees that you're not compelled to bring or uphold the statement that you made. It's only in a case where the evidence that you're going to bring has two types of evidence to it. It has primary evidence and secondary or derivative evidence. In that case, we're going to see the primary evidence. But in a case where there's no such distinction, that's where the Chachamim believe that you do not need to be Mivarer. Kiyat Ravin, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. So as opposed to before, we had Rav Dimi telling us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have Ravin telling us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan an answer. Reisha Be'edim Psulim. The Dayanim Kshirim, the beginning of the Mishnah, is a case where the Eidim were found to be disqualified, and the Dayanim were Kshirim. We don't have any evidence either way. Migo. But the Baal Din had cast aspersions on both of them. He had said that the Eidim were Psulim, and the Dayanim were Psulim. So far, the only evidence we have to support that is that the Eidim are Psulim. And now the Gemara says, Migo the Pasle Eidim, Pasle Nami Dayone. Since he successfully disqualified the Eidim when he said he thought they were Psulim, we're going to believe him about the Dayanim, even though he doesn't have evidence to back it up. But the Migo makes us believe him because he's demonstrated already a certain accuracy in disqualifying the Eidim. And since he was successful at that, we're going to assume that he's also going to be successful at identifying a Dayanim that are Psulim. And when he says they're Psulim, we believe him for that Migo. The Seifa is just the opposite. It's a case where they have Dayanim, Psulim, Eidim, Kshirim. The Dayanim are problematic, whereas Eidim are fine. The Migo, the Pasle Dayanim, Pasle Nami Eidim. So again, here the Migo will be kicked in. Since you are successful at disqualifying the judges, then we're also going to believe you with regards to disqualifying the Eidim, even though we don't have evidence to that yet. I understand why you would have the Migo in this direction. Well, you've disqualified the Eidim successfully. We believe you by the Dayanim, Ika Beit Din Achrina, because that's because they can go adjudicate the case in a different Beit Din. Ella, Migo, the Pasle Dayone, Pasle Nami Eidim. Why would you ever say a Migo that once you've disqualified the Dayanim, you can also disqualify the Eidim? Ha, Eidim Tuleka. Eidim are a limited commodity. If through a Migo we're going to disqualify these Eidim, then you're going to actually undermine the case or make it difficult for the litigant to bring evidence anymore because you disqualified his Eidim. Where it says, lo, tzricha de'ika kat acheret. Again, here it's a case where there are two kite Eidim here. There are two sets of Eidim that are going to testify. Ha leka kat acheret mai. If there's only one set of Eidim here, what's the din? Achenami de'lo matzi pasle. Also over there, you cannot ruin it or post-sell them. So based on that, hainu d'rav dimi. That turns out now that this differentiation that Rabin is making is identical to what Rav Dimi said. Rav Dimi says that what Rabbi Meir says is only true in our Mishnah when you have two kitei Eidim. You have two sets of Eidim. Whereas if you have one set of Eidim, that can't work because then you can't disqualify it.
And that is exactly the distinction made here by Rabin. Now, it's not surprising. They're both quoting from Rabbi Yochanan. But the fact that we distinguish between their quotes from Rabbi Yochanan, we expect that there should be some difference between their opinions in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. There should be some nafkamina between them.
So the verse says, there is a difference between the two, which is migo. Mar savar amrinan migo. Ravin says that we do invoke migo. Mar savar, and Rav Dimi says, lo amrinan migo, we do not invoke migo. The way Rashi reads this is that this is in general, not particularly in our case, but do you subscribe to this concept of migo in other places? That's what the Gemara says, Ika Benayo. This is the nafkamina between them, which is Ravin thinks that we do apply migo in general, whereas Rav Dimi thinks that we don't apply migo in general.
Whereas the Yad Ramah learns just the opposite of Rashi and says that the machloket is whether we apply migo over here. Do we apply the migo once he's disqualified the edim? Does that automatically disqualify the dayanim? Which is that if we find that the edim are psulim, we will take that and use the migo to extrapolate it to the dayanim as well. Whereas Rav Dimi says that the whole reason that we believe him over here is because he had two sets of edim. So only with regard to the edim do we consider him not to be a nogeha badavar, and therefore he's believed. But as far as the dayanim are concerned, if they're ksherim, he has no right to be posel the dayanim through a migo. And therefore the nafgamina between them is a narrow scope, which is this case in particular, do we apply migo once he's disqualified the edim? Can we then extrapolate that to the dayanim? Rav Dimi will say no, and Ravin will say yes. So now we've concluded with four different explanations for Rabbi Meir's position in our Mishnah. We had the explanation of, the first explanation was that the aid here was a single aid that was accepted, the equivalent of two aidim. Then we had the position of Rabbi Elazar that we were speaking about, a case where he and another aid joined together to disqualify the kat aidim. And then we have the position of Rav Dimi and Rav Ravin, who quoted in the name of Rav Yochanan, Rav Dimi saying that when you have two Kete Edim, and Tzarech Levayer is the issue, whereas Ravin said that it is also a Shtei Kete Edim, but the question is, do we apply the Migo, or do we not apply the Migo over here? All right, we're going to stop here, 10 lines down on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph.